From WOUB Public Media in Athens, Ohio, you're listening to Who Lies Beneath the Asylum. I'm Sherry Russo. This is a podcast about restoring dignity and respect by giving a voice to the voiceless. Amanda Smith and Levi Mercer are connected by more than just the fact that they both are buried in Cemetery 1 of the Old Athens Lunatic Asylum. They are also connected by blood, as the two were father and daughter. They were both institutionalized at different times. Levi was admitted to the asylum 7 years after his daughter Amanda died there. We don't know if he knew that she was buried on the grounds under a number, or if he had any idea that he'd likely join her there. But one of his present-day ancestors has been conducting research, trying to put all the pieces together to tell both of their stories. Retired library archivist and asylum cemetery researcher Doug McCabe joins us now. Hi, Doug.
Hi, Sherry.
So what do the public records available tell us about Levi and Amanda?
Well, Levi's committal papers are missing from the asylum collection at Ohio University Archives. But other records reveal he was born around 1804 in Virginia and was living in Jackson County, Ohio, sometime before 1820. He married Belinda, or Melinda, in 1828. He was a farmer, and sometime between 1850 and 1860, he was placed in the asylum in Columbus. And before 1870 and until 1888, he was kept in the Jackson County Jail. Now, Amanda's committal papers are at the archives, and from those records and other records, it's revealed that she was born in 1829 in Jackson County, Ohio, and she married a Parker Smith, a farmer and a schoolteacher, in 1848. And she was the mother of four children before she was put in the asylum in 1874 at the age of 45.
Wow, that's young. That's young. When you were talking about Levi, you said he was married to either a Belinda or a Melinda. Is that because you saw her name written differently on different records?
That's correct, yeah. Different censuses have her written down, and that's not really unusual. It's up to the enumerator and their hearing, I guess, as to whether they get the name right or not. But in this case, it's two different consonants, and I can understand how that might have happened. And then what you do to just make sure that you're really talking about the same person is looking at other records, other censuses, to see how, you know, like when age is reported and residence and so forth, you can be sure that you've got the same person.
So how did you learn about these two stories?
Well, with most patients buried in the cemeteries, it really starts by looking at the names and the copy of the asylum grave book, and then looking at the committal papers. And there, from there, then you go to public records to start putting things together.
Well, why it may not be common to have both father and daughter buried on the asylum grounds, it does speak to the fact that mental illness can run in families, right?
Well, yeah. Throughout the admissions indexes, there are examples of immediate and extended family members put in the asylum. Why or how mental illness could run through families, well, I'll leave that to those who are more qualified and trained than I am.
Now it's time to hear Levi's story through a first-person style account with the help of voice actor Tom Hodson and Levi's descendant, Tracy Rylands.
My name is Levi Mercer, grave 153, cemetery 1, buried 1888. I was admitted to the asylum that same year as patient number 2048 from Jackson County. I was born in Virginia just after the turn of the 19th century. I moved to Ohio and became a farmer. Following the Revolutionary War, Ohio was a primary destination of westward-bound pioneers because of the fertile farmland in the Ohio River Valley.
He's related to me as my fourth great-granduncle. I know that's a bit of a mouthful, but he was the brother of my fourth great-grandmother, Elizabeth Elvira Mercer. Levi was born in Virginia, but at some point his family moved to Jackson County, Ohio.
On December 18th, 1828, I got married to a woman named Belinda Cantwell.
He was actually married to her by another relative of mine who was a Martin.
We had five children, four girls, Amanda, Josephine, Martha, and Caroline, and one boy, little Levi.
I know that Levi was a justice of the peace there in Jackson County. He was a farmer. He had children. He played an active role in his community. But sometime, I'm guessing after 1850, something went wrong or something happened.
One thing that happened was the end of my marriage with Belinda.
Sometime in 1853, Levi and Belinda divorced. I just recently found that out in from newspaper clippings, and their property was separated. And he went into the Columbus Asylum in 1960. Divorce was almost unheard of in the 1850s, but they divorced, and he was sent to the asylum in 1860. And all I know is that he was there, and they don't have a reason for why he was placed there. I haven't been able to access any of that because, you know, the asylum burned. So I don't know what landed him there. It could have been anything.
Eventually, I ended up back in Jackson County, Ohio. But it was not because I was able to go back to being on my own. I was living at the county jail.
I have no idea how that would have worked. I don't know if he was like just if they thought he was slightly off and needed to be watched and not dangerous enough to be, you know, in an asylum. The years after that, between that and when he ends up in the Athens Asylum, are kind of strange because the census records indicate he lived in 1870 with a jailer by the name of Wade Johnson, and then 1880 census with a jailer named J.M. Lynch. And then between 1887 and 1888, he bounced between the jail and the local infirmary, finally landing in the Athens Asylum in late February 1888, and he died there on November 7th, 1888. So he was actually only in there less than a year.
That's when I was buried under number 153 in the asylum cemeteries. And more than 100 years later, while doing family research, Tracy discovered where I was.
This was actually several years ago. I was finally able to get a membership to Ancestry, and I started looking at him and looking at census records, and I was like, oh my goodness, he's, you know, he was an inmate, and you think, okay, prison, but no, he was an inmate in an asylum. So I think I'm the first person in the family to have uncovered this in many years.
Joining us now is Paul LaRue. Paul's a retired social studies teacher and history buff and is on the State Board of Education in Ohio. He's also conducted research projects involving veterans and unmarked graves. Paul, thanks for being here.
Thanks, Sherry.
Well, Paul, Tracy has done a lot of digging and was able to put together several big pieces of Levi's story, but a lot of his story is still quite a mystery, mainly why he was institutionalized. Now, I know there are many reasons that asylum intake records could have disappeared or are just unable to be found, but this one seems very interesting. The Columbus Asylum burned down with the inmate records inside. Can you tell us what you know about that?
Absolutely. Fire was one of the greatest threats of institutions at that time. And in fact, there were two fires involving the asylum in Columbus. The first one, the one I think you're referencing, is 1868. Actually, both these fires took place within a day of each other on November 18th. The 1868 fire is really interesting because there were 330 patients there at that time, and seven patients were killed in the fire. The cause of the fire was never known. In fact, the cisterns that they were using to try to put out the fire ran dry.
Oh, wow.
An interesting piece also is there were patients that were taken from the institute and moved over to the high school for the deaf. The Ohio School for the Deaf was at that time at the corner of Grant and Washington. And it's fascinating. If you ever go, it's now what's called Topiary Park. Have you ever been to the downtown Columbus Library? This is actually the original facility where the Ohio School for the Deaf was. And in fact, they moved. There were actually three schools that were there. The last school is actually still standing. It's actually being used today as by Cristo Rey Columbus. But anyhow, so they moved patients from there. And sadly, the records burned. Now, in 1881, there was another fire. That time, they had the records actually secured in a fireproof safe that fell through the floor and fell into the basement. But actually, those records were recovered.
Hmm.
And now that fire actually led to the creation of the Feeble-Minded Institute.
Oh, wow. Okay. Well, it seems so strange to me that both father and daughter are buried on the asylum grounds. When you think about how mental illness runs in families, does this seem unusual to you or no?
It's certainly when you just on the surface, it's like that seems coincidental. But because there are so many causes of, you know, mental illness is something we're still really learning about today. I always worry that especially in those days, that people were classified a certain way. And if your dad had something and maybe they didn't understand it and they didn't know, then you would be classified the same way.
Well, Levi was released from the Columbus Asylum before it burned down, but his records were inside. And according to the 1870 census, Levi is listed as insane and living in the Jackson County Jail. Now, at this point, he was 80 years old. Have you ever come across any other arrangements like this, or do you have any thoughts as to why that might have happened?
I don't know specifically to that account, but I will say that one of the things, especially in those days, they didn't know how to necessarily treat people, and they didn't, and so people would get labeled. One of the stories from the Athens Asylum is that of Corporal Woodson Williams. He was a Black Civil War soldier. He was actually shot below the knee. So he comes home and he tries to work. Again, this is, you know, in those days, he tries to work. He probably self-medicates. And so, you know, he becomes an alcoholic. He is then labeled a drunkard and he ends up in the Athens Asylum.
Wow.
And so here's a veteran who through circumstance and through, I would say, misidentification, and he will be at the Athens Asylum until his death.
So that could have happened to Levi, right?
Absolutely. That's why all these stories are so fascinating and so important, because they tell us, you know, bits of pieces, you know, things that are sometimes interesting and sometimes a little uncomfortable about how we treated folks in those days.
So in almost every episode of Who Lies Beneath, there's been a term used to describe a patient or a facility that would never be used today, like lunatic asylum or feeble-minded, which we've talked about before. But in Levi's story, the term lunatic pauper struck me. Have you ever heard that term? And can you tell us why it might have been used to describe Levi and maybe others?
Well, pauper is a commonly, I'll break it in half and go pauper first. Pauper was a very common term used in those days for someone that was indigent. And in almost every cemetery I've ever been in, there's a pauper section. You know, and in fact, the cemetery tour we were given last week, I was back in the back corner of the cemetery, and there's about 1,200 burials in this section, but there's about 50 headstones. And the question always is, well, why aren't there more headstones? And the answer is, you know, these folks were indigent and they were buried by the county. Lunatic actually goes back to 1290. It's the first time I got my Oxford English Dictionary out to look this one up.
1290.
1290
wow.
Is okay. The first recorded use of the word, but it's about the moon. Madness and moon have always kind of been connected. So lunatic is, you know, a reference back to that. But it's fascinating for as long as that word has been around, and it's still used today. So again, a lunatic pauper would have been someone who had some form of mental illness and was indigent.
And so all the people who believe that when there's a full moon that craziness comes out, it all traces back to this 1290 lunatic word, right?
Yeah, I mean, we always howl at the moon. I mean, we hear those phrases, but I was actually fascinated that it went back that far.
That is amazing. All right, Paul, well, thank you so much for being here with us and shedding some light on this.
Thank you.
While Levi was living at the county jail, his oldest daughter, Amanda, was admitted to the Athens Asylum in 1874. We don't know if they had a relationship or if he even knew she was there. Now it's time to hear Amanda's story through a first-person style account with the help of voice actor Beth Kraft and Levi's descendant, Tracy Rylands.
My name is Amanda Smith, Grave 13, Cemetery 1, buried 1881. I was admitted to the asylum on September 13, 1874, as patient 330 from Jackson County. I was born in 1829 as the oldest child of Levi and Belinda Mercer. On May 20, 1848, I married Parker Smith, who was a farmer just like my dad, and eventually also became a schoolteacher. By 1870, we had four children, three girls, Elizabeth, Sarah, and Mary, and one boy, William. But a few years after our youngest, Mary, was born, I was institutionalized. I was 45 years old at the time. According to my committal papers, I had been partially insane for 3 years and had imagined that I had venereal diseases. I asked various physicians for treatment and told people all over the county about my condition. The committal papers also say I had inflammation of the uterus, which produced disability of the brain tissues.
Starting in 1874, there was, a hearing in May of 1874 that judged her not insane. But in September, she was put before a hearing again and was judged insane and was sent to the asylum in September of 1874. And I don't know why. It does not say why in any of the newspapers I saw. I don't know if it would have been a postpartum situation. I don't think so. I don't know. But I wonder what happened, and, you know, did her husband want her in there? Did something happen in the home? Was she a danger to, because she, I think her last child was born in 1870. So was something going on in the home?
I was in the asylum for 7 years before I died. My mother, Belinda, died in 1860, and my father, Levi, as you know, was living in the Jackson County Jail under supervision. So, I was not claimed by anyone in my family. I was buried on April 5th, 1881, under grave number 13. 7 years before my father would be admitted to the asylum.
Doug, what does inflammation of the uterus, which produced disability of the brain tissues, mean?
Well, the simplest answer is that the examining doctor was just guessing and went with a diagnosis common at the time, that a woman's genitals and reproductive organs were governed by the health or ill health of the brain. I mean, we need to remember that the state of the medical profession, especially when it came to diagnosing mental illnesses, was relatively primitive. On the other hand, it could be said that Amanda's physical distress contributed to her mental distress, and in that sense, the doctor was right.
So as we have mentioned, committal papers aren't often available. How did you find Amanda's, and what insight does that give you into her situation that maybe you haven't had with others?
Well, when I first started my research into the patients buried at the asylum or any of the other patients at the asylum, Ohio law stated that medical records were confidential in perpetuity. I couldn't include the medical information into the database that I created. Then, through the efforts of State Representative Jimmy Stewart, the law was changed so that older records could be accessed. Recently, the Ohio University Archives has digitized some of those earliest records, and I was able to use the medical statements in Amanda's committal papers from that. So now folks have access to some of those papers and get at least a sketchy insight into the conditions of the patients.
Okay. Tracy Rylands is joining us now to talk more about her discovery of Levi and Amanda at the asylum cemeteries. Tracy's also the author of a blog called Adventures in Cemetery Hopping and has researched others buried at cemeteries similar to Athens, along with her relatives, Levi and Amanda. Tracy, thanks for joining us. Levi was the first relative you found. Tell us about how you felt when you learned he was buried under a number.
Well, it made me sad because, you know, being that I've been writing a cemetery blog for 10 years, although I did discover this, I think, before I started writing the blog. I mean, nobody should have to be buried under an anonymous number. Everybody deserves to have some kind of marker with their name and the dates and some kind of information about who they were. And I understand why it was done, but it doesn't make the sadness of the, you know, the lack of his identity, you know, that he's just a number. And it made me sad. But since I've learned that a lot of asylums didn't even have anything on some of the markers, I guess I should be glad he even has one, because some places buried them anonymously and didn't even have, they just had rocks. And so it's kind of a hard thing, but knowing that your relative is number 153, yeah, it's kind of sad.
So tell me how you learned that you had a second relative buried in the Athens Asylum Cemetery.
Finding out about Amanda actually happened because of you, because I saw you were doing the podcast. And I thought, well, let me go back and see if there's new information about Levi, because I got my subscription to newspapers.com a couple of years ago to use as a tool for my blog. And I'm looking up something for him, and I see a newspaper clipping about the wife of Parker Smith, who was the former daughter of Levi Mercer, was in the asylum. And that totally just floored me, because I didn't know she even existed before this, because she was born in 1829 and she got married to Parker Smith in 1848. So she does not appear on the 1850 census because she's already married. So I didn't know she was their oldest child, and I didn't know about her. And subsequently discovered that she had married Parker Smith, who was a school teacher in 1860. They had four children together. But starting in 1874, there was, a hearing in May of 1874 that judged her not insane. But in September, she was put before a hearing again and was judged insane and was sent to the asylum in September of 1874. And I don't know why. It does not say why in any of the newspaper stuff I saw. And I don't have I have not inquired about her from anyone at the Friends of group. But I do know that she died there. I believe that was in April of 1881. And it doesn't say what she died of, but she is in grave number 13 in cemetery number 1. And, you know, Levi's in grave cemetery, it's in cemetery number 1, also in grave number 153. So they are together. And I didn't know that until just a month or two ago. And it's just you know, she was there longer than he was. And I didn't even think of that possibility, but she was there. And also Parker Smith, her husband, his brother Enos was married to her younger sister, Sarah, which I just found that out this week.
It just seems, I don't think ironic is the right word, but it's the only word that's coming to mind, that they both ended up buried in the same place under a numbered tombstone.
Yes.
I'm sure that's not very common.
No. I mean, I know that, you know, mental illness can run in families, but I have not run across in my research at other asylums that I've researched, the one in Clarinda, Iowa, for one, and there's another one in Norfolk, Nebraska, and I haven't run across that in those two cases. So this, you know, I guess this is a unique situation here. And I did do some looking on the other children. None of them ended up there, and Belinda, his wife, died in the 1860s. So I'm not aware of any other Mercers that landed there, but those two are the only ones. But yeah, it's definitely a unique situation.
So now, knowing all of this about Levi and Amanda and how they ended up at the asylum, how do you feel about your family history now? And do you feel compelled to do more research to try to figure out what happened to them?
I would love to know what put Amanda in the asylum. myself, I have struggled with depression since my teens and have been in, various forms of counseling. I have taken medication for it. So, the stigma of a mental health diagnosis is not new to me. It makes me empathize with what these two people in my, in my family tree dealt with and did not have the tools that I have now, and have easy access to. And the stigma is not nearly as great as I'm sure it was back then. And it makes me empathize with their situation and that this was going on back then and that now I don't have to go through this. My husband doesn't have to send me somewhere. I can do these things on my own and get help and have access to medical care that these folks, it was so primitive because so little was known. So it gives me a lot of empathy for them and wanting to know more what their story is about.
Last question. We mentioned that you write a blog called Adventures in Cemetery Hopping. So which came first, the chicken or the egg? Did you discover your passion for cemeteries and learn about them by doing your own family research? Or did you get into looking into cemeteries and then uncover your own family history?
The chicken and egg were kind of scrambled together, so to speak. My husband had gotten me a subscription to Ancestry.com. And around not too long after that, my son started kindergarten and I had some more time on my hands. And I discovered Find a Grave, which I'm sure you're familiar with, which is a database of cemeteries around the world. And I started visiting cemeteries to photograph graves for people who were requesting pictures of grave sites of relatives that were not local to them. And I started coming across stories that were just very compelling to me. And my background is in writing. I have a BA in journalism and a master's in English literature from the University of Georgia. So writing is what I do and is a passion of mine, always has been. And I thought, well, I can marry my passion for writing and this new interest I have. And that's when the blog was born. And the blog will be 10 years old in January. And I just love telling these stories. And I have a few of mine in there. So the family tree kind of gets included there from time to time. And it's something I love to do because every life matters. Every life is important. And those stories behind the stones always need to be told, even if they're very, simple and don't have a lot of action to somebody famous. That's what I want to do and I want to keep doing.
We are no longer just numbers in Cemetery 1 at the Athens Asylum. My name is Levi Mercer.
And my name is Amanda Smith.
And those were the stories and impact of the people buried under graves 13 and 153. Their names were Levi Mercer and Amanda Smith. Now we turn to you. We know Levi and Amanda's names and stories now, but there is so much more work to be done to give a voice to those who were voiceless. We want to hear your stories about long-lost relatives in your families who you believe may be buried under a numbered tombstone at cemeteries across the country. We'd love to share your story and see if the work done here in Athens might lead you to some answers and maybe even a name on their grave marker. Email us at wholiesbeneath@woub.org. Thank you for listening, and until next time, take care of each other. Who Lies Beneath the Asylum is a production of WOUB Public Media in Athens, Ohio, written by me, Sherry Russo. Adam Rich is our audio engineer, artwork by Sean Anderson. Special thanks to Doug McCabe and Paul LaRue for contributing their knowledge and voices to this podcast, and Tom Hodson and Beth Kraft for their work as the voices of Levi and Amanda. If you like the show, please rate and subscribe or visit woub.org to learn more.